Greetings and salutations from the Starship Money Talk. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the program. It is America's Money Program, Money Talk. Coast to coast, border to border, in the islands of Hawaii and north to Alaska. Thank you for joining us. It is great to have you with us here on Money Talk. Well, the jobs report is out, and the jobs report is another good jobs report. Came out on Friday from the Labor Department. And the announcement was that employers added 214,000 new jobs in the month of October, and that brought the official unemployment rate down to its lowest level in many years, 5.8%. Just 1 year ago, the unemployment rate was 7.2%. Now, there was also an upward revision to the prior 2 months of 31,000. So when you add the 214 to the 31, you come up with 245,000 new jobs added as a result of this announcement, including the upward revision. Now, the average monthly job gain for the past 6 months is 235,000. And that certainly tells us that this is an economy that is in continuing in recovery mode. And really an economy that is doing better than the rank and file think it is. You know, some people talk about the economy being in recession, which is ridiculous nonsense, total and complete nonsense. The economy is growing. It's growing at a moderate pace. It's producing jobs at a good pace. Certainly, we have not seen a lot of wage increases. Wages are up just over 2% in the last year, and that's one of the reasons that inflation is so low. You know, this is really something that a lot of people don't get, and it's a shame. Because on the one hand, if you get inflation, people are complaining and whining and moaning about inflation and the fact that they can't buy as much with their money as they used to be able to buy. But, of course, one of the principal drivers of inflation is higher wages. In the aggregate, for all of business, wages are the leading cost of doing business. And so when you get inflation in wages, that's a problem because it drives up the inflation gauges. But when you have wages moving along basically at a rate very close to the rate of inflation, wages are growing just slightly more than the rate of inflation, then you get the complaints about the fact that, wages are not going up more. So when you look at the situation, there really is no winning formula, because to make people happy with higher wages, then that leads to inflation and their money buys less, and they shouldn't be happy about inflation. But then when you have wage stability, as we have now, slowly growing wages pretty much in line with inflation, then you have low inflation, which is a good thing, because your money can continue to purchase, to retain its purchasing value. And this is why it is so very, very difficult to make everybody happy when it comes to this topic. Trust me. If wages start to accelerate and inflation starts to go up, you're going to hear all kinds of people complaining and whining and moaning about inflation. They're not doing that right now because inflation is very, very low. In fact, as we speak, the year-over-year rate of inflation in all of the major inflation indexes is less than 2%. Let's take a look at the demographics of this unemployment report, because they are always interesting. White unemployment, as announced by the Labor Department, 4.8%. That's a full percent below the national average of 5.8. Black unemployment, 10.9. That's more than 5% above the national average of 5.8. And, of course, as we've learned over the years on Money Talk by looking at these figures, education continues to play a major role in the unemployment situation. And it's easily visible. In fact, the economy has improved sufficiently, the jobs picture has improved sufficiently, that those with less than a high school diploma have an unemployment rate of 5.9%. That's down 2.9% in the last year. A year ago, that figure was 10.8%, which is way up. And now those that do not have a high school diploma have a 7.9% unemployment rate. All others are below the national average of 5.8%. High school diploma, 5.7% unemployment. Some college, any college, 4.8%. And those with a bachelor's or more, 3.1%. So all the way down the line, in every single case, you see that value of education. And that's why you've heard me say consistently on Money Talk since the beginning of our broadcast that the best money you're ever going to spend for yourself, for your family members, for your extended family members, for anybody, best money you're ever going to spend in your lifetime is the money that is spent on enhancing educational value. Aside from all of the other benefits that come from enhancing your educational value, and there are many, look at the impact it has on unemployment. I mean, it is really dramatic. Now, as far as this complaint that you hear that there are too many part-time jobs, there are about 7 million plus. I mean, we're talking about a labor force that is absolutely gigantic in the United States. I mean, we have in round numbers, we have 140 million workers in the United States in the non-farm sector. Rounded out to the nearest million, 140 million. Only about 7 million of those are in the part-time category. That means almost all of them are in the full-time category. So you hear this whining and complaining about part-time jobs, but the reality is it's a relatively small percentage of the big picture. In fact, it's a small percentage of the big picture if we're going to say that roughly 133 out of 140 million workers are full-time. Then why focus all of the attention on the part-time job? The answer, of course, is political, obviously. Thank you. Dad, hello, Jim. You're on Money Talk.
Yeah, how are you guys doing today?
Doing well.
I had a question for you. Earlier you were talking about indicators that show where the inflation rate is at compared to what the Federal Reserve says that it's at. I was wondering if you could let us know where is food involved in those indicators, and if it isn't, could you tell us where the food interest or the food inflation rate is at?
Let me clarify something you said, Jim, which is important that people understand, that the Federal Reserve does not announce the inflation rates. The inflation rates are announced by other agencies, and they are not announced and kept and managed by the Federal Reserve. So the Federal Reserve is in a similar position that you're in. The inflation numbers come out, and they look at those numbers, and they assess those numbers. To answer your question, the Consumer Price Index has a year-over-year increase right now of 1.7%. That applies to the headline all-inclusive, including food number, and also applies to the core number. But there are several sectors of inflation that are monitored individually. They are segregated so that they can be watched. One of them is food, and the overall food component is up 3.0 year-over-year. Now, of course, as you know, this is partly related to climate. And climate is going to be what it's going to be, and it's going to have an impact. It's already had an impact in a lot of the growing areas in California, as you know. And certainly climate is going to affect food prices.
Thank you for the answer.
Appreciate the call. Good to hear from Omaha, Nebraska. 1-800-934-2221. Scott is with us, listening to the mighty WLS Chicago. Hello, Scott.
Yes. Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I was listening to your statements about education. Recently, I was on the East Coast, and I ran into an old friend. He's in his late 30s, and he was considering law school. He went to a major law school, and he spoke to the advisor, and the advisor advised him against going to law school because the demand for lawyers is not there, and they are downsizing their program, and they're very particular about who they admit into the school. He also
Scott, that doesn't surprise me if I can respond. That doesn't surprise me at all.
No, you're saying about education. This is
well,
about
I'm getting,
education.
I'm going to, can I have a response, or would you like to just continue talking?
No, go right ahead. But I would like to know what education you're talking about.
Well, my response is this. With reference to your comment, I am not surprised at all to hear that what you're saying is that you were told that there are too many lawyers. That would not surprise me at all. In other words, if we could lay out a theorem here with evidence that there are too many lawyers, that would not surprise me at all. But there's another problem in that profession. There are many in the law profession that hate the profession and they want to do something else. There are a lot of people in the United States that are qualified to practice law. They don't practice it because they hate it. And they elect to do something else. So I have, you tell me if I'm wrong, I have never told anyone on Money Talk in 29 years of programming to become a lawyer. Never did it.
But you're stating about education. He also.
Of course I'm stating about education because it is very clear from the figures that we look at every month, and sometimes we go over them in detail on the program as I did today, it is very clear that education leads to better employment opportunities. Forget about the attorney field. We're not talking about attorneys. We're talking about the level of education, because look at the numbers. No high school degree, unemployment 7.9, high school 5.7, bachelor's 3.1 or higher. And by the way, and I've said it a million times, I'll say it again. I don't care whether you get a bachelor's or higher. That's not the point. You can go to trade school and develop a trade. You can open your own business and be an entrepreneur with your own trade. Millions of people do it. That's wonderful. But the point is, you have to do something, Scott.
I understand that. But he also stated that they're also shrinking their MBA program, that there's not a demand for MBAs.
It doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me at all that there are a lot of MBAs out there. And maybe we don't need so many MBAs as we have, because a lot of people went into that a decade ago thinking it was the road to riches, not knowing what was coming. So that doesn't surprise me at all. And once again, Scott, you've hit a bullseye. In 29 years of Money Talk, I have never once encouraged anybody to get an MBA.
But the economy is shrinking, and the only reason we have the economy that we do now is because of the Fed.
Okay, now you are off base, and I will tag you out. The economy is not shrinking. The economy is expanding. In fact, in the last 6 months, the second and third quarter together, we've had the fastest rate of gross domestic product growth in many, many years. We have also produced over 200,000 jobs on average every month this year. So you're off base, tagged out, when you say incorrectly that the economy is shrinking. This is nonsense.
Our headhunters, are they pursuing candidates as they did in the past, even 10 years ago?
Who cares, Scott? The point is, we just added another 200,000-plus jobs as we have on average every month this year. I mean, you're hung up on things that don't matter.
Yes,
you're
they
hung
do
up,
matter.
You're, no, they don't matter. It doesn't matter whether we have more lawyers. It doesn't matter whether we have more MBAs. And it certainly doesn't matter what headhunters are doing. What
so
matters,
we need more part-time jobs at the mall? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, you weren't listening earlier when I pointed out that out of the 140 million people working in America, 133 million are working full-time. Did you miss that part?
No, I did not. But if someone has two part-time jobs, that qualifies as a full-time person.
Well, I don't think so, Scott. Let me ask you a question. How is it that you focus on the 7 million that are part-time and you forget about the 133 million that are full-time? What kind of nonsense is that? You need to do some homework, Scott, before you call again, because you've got a lot of misinformation in terms of the economy is shrinking. To quote you verbatim, the economy is shrinking. I don't think so. The gross domestic products don't support that. Certainly the year-over-year consumer spending does not support that. And certainly the jobs figures do not support that. So you've got a lot of baloney on the counter right now. The way to remove it is, if you'll pardon the pun, education. Busy phones. Don is on the line in New York. Hello, Don.
The other day saying that the strong dollar is IBM's problem. And if that's true, why isn't it affecting other companies as bad?
It affects any company that has exports, Don. And the way it affects companies with exports, and certainly IBM would be one of them, is that their products overseas become more expensive in local terms. Because the dollar is strong, that means you're going to have higher-priced exports, and that hurts any companies with an any company with an export account.
But it doesn't seem to be. I mean, the overall market is up. That's what I'm saying. Why isn't it affecting other companies like it's affecting IBM?
Well, IBM just suspended its future earnings guidance, Don. All the other companies did not. That's a big deal. When you make an announcement that you are suspending your future earnings guidance, that is a huge deal. Uh-huh. So that's a company, that's a company-specific issue.
Hmm. What do you think their futures?
Well, I think that the reason they suspended their future guidance is because they think they have to do some things differently from the way they've been doing them. And we wish them well, but I have no idea how effective the current management at the company will be in making that happen. Obviously, they're going to have to make some changes in their business model. If they weren't, they would have never made an announcement that they're suspending their earnings guidance. Appreciate the call. 1-800-934-2221. We're going to Wisconsin. GM, it's your turn. Welcome.
Hello?
Yes, hi. You're on Money Talk. Welcome.
Good morning. Good afternoon. I just had a question for you. You know, you had mentioned that you think the economy is doing real great, and I should.
No. Don't, please don't put words in my mouth because I don't appreciate it. I never use the expression. Never use the expression in my discussion today, which I had a detailed discussion. I never said the economy is doing real great. In fact, this is what I said, GM. This is specifically and verbatim what I said, that the economy is growing moderately. That's what I said. That's a lot different than the economy is doing very great. And
well, I guess not my only question.
I think that's a big deal. I think it's a big difference between the economy is doing real great, and which is your words, and the economy is growing moderately, which is my words.
Well, that's
which
fine.
Are my.
I still have
my
a question words. For you, regardless of what terminology you use. My concern is that I'm a small business guy, and in the last 5 years, because of government regulations, my increase per unit has dropped between 15 and 20%, depending on what I do. And my average workload per unit, I do reports, some of them are used by the government, some of them by private lenders, has increased about 10 to 15% per unit. You know, so that's really impacted me. I'm not starving, but government regulations have made just a tremendous change in our workload and our income. And I think
you should be very pleased then to know that 2014 set a record for the least new government regulations. In fact, in 2014, because of the split between the White House and Congress and the split in Congress itself this year, we've had a minimum amount of legislation that has passed. So maybe that should make you happy.
Would that give me back my 15 to 20% I've lost?
I don't know who to talk to on that.
My question is, you seem to I don't like to use this word because then you're going to accuse me of using a word that I'm not using. But you seem to think that anything that happens to us is just fine and okay.
Now that's an interesting statement. That's an interesting statement. Anything that happens to us is just fine and dandy. Well, I have not said that. You have said it. You have said that I have said it. That's not true. So there you go again.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you think government regulations that increased my workload 20% and gave me a 15 to 20% decrease in wages, do you think that's fine?
Well, why don't you be specific? I don't know what you're talking about.
I just told you, government regulations has caused us to go from everything that we do at 350, now it's 300 per report, because the government put another layer of bureaucracy in between us and the people that we're working for that have to be paid. And because of the increase in the Dodd-Frank bill of regulations and what each report has to have in it, because we do appraisal work, that takes me about 20% longer per report. Now, if I want
to go, is this related to what happened in the financial crisis?
Yes, it is.
Well, look, when there's a financial crisis of that magnitude, there's going to be pushback. That's the way it works.
And then, so again, that's okay then.
No, what's not okay is to allow people to go out and make loans that they can't repay, to make loans that they're allowed to lie about on their documents, and to put the system into a position where it could have failed. The financial system could have failed. And any player in that game is going to get pushback. That's the way it works. There's nothing you can do about that, because if there's no pushback, then the system is gone. This is Money Talk. We were talking earlier in this hour about what has been going on with the labor report, and it was a good labor report. The average weekly earnings for the month of October were $850, and that represents a 2.6% year-over-year change in average weekly earnings. Now, even if you take the Consumer Price Index, which slightly overstates inflation relative to the Personal Consumption Expenditure Index, you get real average weekly earnings increase of 0.9% or close to 1%. So there you go. Now, obviously, if you work in the mortgage industry, there have been dramatic changes in the mortgage industry, and we're going to talk more about this later. But the fact is, the mortgage industry was at the core of responsibility of what happened in 2008. They weren't towing the line in any way, shape, or form. You know the drill. No income loans, liar loans, negative amortization loans, where you paid less each month than a normal monthly payment, and it was just added to the principal. You know the drill. That's what caused, that was at the heart and soul of what caused the real estate collapse in 2008. Of course there are changes in that industry, dramatic changes. It's inevitable when an industry implodes that there are going to be changes. One, let's go out to Sausalito, listening to the great KSFO Radio San Francisco. Frank is on the line. Hello, Frank.
Yeah, hi, Bob. I just wanted to mention my experience that's a little different than some of the other callers that had called in. At age 50, I've gone back for an MBA program, and it is by far the best thing I've ever done. I am an older student, but I'm an incredibly dedicated student, and I'm able to leverage over 25 years of industry experience. But what I wanted to say, Bob, is in addition to working very hard with the course materials and studying and reading, having listened to Money Talk for so long has really made me a star in the class. Understanding and being familiar with all the concepts, the terms, the economic principles, the understanding of the way the Fed works. And here I am approaching critical mass. I feel very good about my career, and it's very empowering to go back to get additional education and really bolster my career and manage it, invest in it. And it's been the best thing I've ever done. And I am, in fact, getting calls from various recruiters and job opportunities even before I'm done with my schooling. But I just wanted to share and thank you, Bob, for a phenomenal education between the books on the reading list. And I don't just listen to Money Talk. I go to the recorded versions online and really study it. So I just wanted to say that education comes in many forms, and it's a very powerful thing.
Frank, I thank you for sharing and appreciate the call.
You're welcome, Bob.
1-800-934-2221 is our contact number. We've heard so many wonderful stories over the years of people who have enhanced their educational background and have benefited from doing so. But I really think that the table on the levels of unemployment relative to the levels of education I mean, that table says it all. I mean, it's straight up and down the line every single month it's released. Every single time around, it's straight up and down that the better educational resume that you put together, the better your chances of employment. Let's get out to Sonoma. John, it is your turn. Welcome. Hello, John. I'm not hearing you very well, John. Let's try this again. Are you on a speakerphone? There you go. Okay.
Speaker, Bob.
Yeah, that's better. Yeah, no speakerphone. That's good. Can I ask you to turn the radio down, John?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Always great to be well prepared. I appreciate the call. What's up?
About 4 or 5 years ago, my parents passed away, and I inherited their home a couple of blocks from the plaza in Sonoma. The house probably sold for close to $1 million. I'm just wondering if there's you have any ideas on how to reduce some of the tax liability. I figure my cost basis is about $550,000 to $600,000.
The best way that I know to get this cost basis where you want it is to make this your principal residence.
Okay, I'd considered that, moving into it for 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, you certainly want to check this through with an enrolled agent or a CPA, but my guess would be, because right now your cost basis is set in stone. Your cost basis is represented by either the date of death value or 6 months later, one of those two figures, and
exactly.
plus any genuine improvements, not maintenance, but any genuine improvements that you've made to the property. So right now, before you make it your principal residence, your cost basis is set at that level, either the date of death or 6 months later, and then the add-on is genuine improvements. Now, the only way that I know of that you can materially change the cost basis potentially is to make it your principal residence. So before you do that, I'd check with an enrolled agent or a CPA, but I think that might lead you to a position where you might have the possibility to have an impact on the cost basis.
Would it make any difference if I took the proceeds from this sale and reinvested it in another rental in another area?
If you do a like kind, are you using it as a rental now?
I am.
Oh, then that's another possibility for sure, which would be a like-kind exchange. Because if you do a like-kind, and I want you to run this through an enrolled agent or CPA in either case, but I am not an accountant, but a like-kind exchange could be an avenue that you could take where you could trade the property for another rental property and defer, not eliminate, but defer the tax liability.
Mm-hmm.
So you
okay.
might want to look into that, but look into both of those avenues, John.
Great. Thank you, Bob.
Appreciate the call. Let's go out to the land of Lincoln. David is on the line. David, it's your turn. David?
Well, yes.
You're on Money Talk.
Hi, Bob. I'm a longtime listener and a subscriber, and I heard you talking about the mortgage debacle, and I wanted to let you know how that affected my life. I'm retired, and I bought a home that was foreclosed on. The home sold initially 8 years ago for $250,000. And so I was able to buy this foreclosed home for $146,000. So to me, that's simply amazing. And it's a great benefit to me. However, somebody's going to have to make up that, and that's the American taxpayer, which includes me.
Well, not necessarily, because there are various ways that underwater mortgage holders have been traded. One of them is through a foreclosure. Another is through a short sale. So it is not necessarily true that the American taxpayer was on the other end of that deal. They may have been, but not necessarily.
Well, the home was empty for a year, and I basically bought it from the bank. So
you would have to backtrack. In other words, to find out who was on the other end, ultimately, you would have to backtrack and find out what was the mortgage amount that was owed on the property, what deal did the bank make with the owner in terms of a short sale possibility. You'd have to know all of that history before you would know who was on the other end of the transaction ultimately. It may have been the bank. The bank may have done a short sale, and the bank may have taken the loss. We don't know.
Right. The house is in a subdivision. Basically, the whole subdivision is approximately 7 to 8 years old, and there are actually quite a few homes in there that have been foreclosed on, and they wait until they sell one before they put another one on the market is what I'm seeing.
Well, I appreciate you sharing, David, and thank you for calling.
Thank you very much. I've followed your advice over the years, and it's done well for me, and thank you.
Thank you, David. 1-800-934-2221. That is our contact number. Let's get Alan on the line. Alan checking in from Hoosier Land in Indiana. Hello, Alan.
Yes. Hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you.
I'm just wondering what your feelings are on using preferred stocks as a source of income. And I'm looking at a couple that maybe might be interesting, like Energy Arkansas First Mortgage Bond or Energy Mississippi First Mortgage Bond and ones of that nature. I haven't heard you talk about these type of preferreds, and I was just curious about what you think.
Well, without commenting on specific preferreds, keep in mind a couple of things about preferreds that are important to know. Number one, preferred stocks are interest sensitive. So as long as the company is in good health and paying its preferred dividends on a regular basis, the critical factor on the price of the preferred share is going to be what happens to interest rates. If interest rates are stable, then you're going to be able to collect your preferred dividend from a healthy company, and you're going to be a happy camper. If interest rates begin to rise, you'll probably see a deterioration in the price of the preferred stock. So that's one thing to be aware of. Now, the other thing to make note of is that the ability of a company to pay preferred dividends is voted on quarterly by the board of directors, in the case where it's a quarterly dividend, I say. So the board of directors, let's say, meets quarterly, and they look at their preferred obligation, and if the profits are there, or if the company outlook is sufficiently favorable, they can then vote to issue the preferred dividend. But a preferred dividend is not guaranteed.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Alan. Good to hear from you. Yeah, and, you know, preferred stocks are interest sensitive, and they are also company-specific sensitive. So always think about that when you think about a preferred stock. How well is this company doing? When the board of directors, for example, gets together on a quarterly basis, let's say, are they going to vote that preferred dividend because they think they have the business plan operating at a level they can do so? But so that's the health of the preferred dividend stream, which traces directly to the health of the company as it is seen through the eyes of the board of directors. They have the power to declare that dividend at their meetings. But separate from that, always keep in mind that there is an interest rate sensitivity aspect to a preferred. And if interest rates do get into a rising trend, you should expect a deteriorating price trend in the price of preferred shares. More to come. Stay with us if you can. Thank you for joining us. Bob Rinker here. It's the flight of the Starship Money Talk.